Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, an out-of-the-box think tank on community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. We present a people's history of the Bible and a parent's view on how to raise giving kids in a taking world. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Free Radio Santa Cruz and Upstart Radio Online. Welcome to the 23rd episode of Third Paradigm. Our title this week is Taxing in a Time of Trouble. We'll be looking at taxes and how they shapeshift, serving corporate interest when they're spent and serving the public interest when voted in. We'll look at how our own alternative media falls prey to this shell game. But first, I'd like to talk about another alternative group, Credo, the long-distance phone company formerly known as Working Assets. On Thursday, they sent out an action alert about the 300 women who protested the Shiite law giving husbands the right to have sex with their wives once every 4 days. The women were met by 1,000 counter-protesters who threw stones and spat at them. Credo asked readers to sign a petition to Obama saying, "Our brave men and women in uniform should be protecting the brave women in Afghanistan who tried to fight this barbaric law. If we don't have a strategy that allows our troops to do that, we should bring them home." So let me see, what would that strategy look like? We could take all the wives who don't want sex with their husbands and put them on the military base. Or maybe we should shoot at those who threw stones and spit. On Al Jazeera this week, an Israeli settler mom said that a stone was as deadly a weapon as a bomb. So maybe the Americans should bomb the hecklers. Of course, the women will have to go home eventually. Let's position a soldier or two in every bedroom. Any husband who doesn't get his wife's fully conscious consent, off with his head. That should do it. Credo doesn't mention the law's far-reaching consequences, that no woman can seek employment, education, or medical care without the consent of her husband. It also fails to recognize that the Taliban's power and abuses have surged with the invasion, because Muslims who defend democracy have been lumped with us, we who use the rhetoric of democracy to hide our resource grabs. Wars always require a victim to be defended, preferably women and children. In 2007, Hollywood came out with Charlie Wilson's War, a movie in which Tom Hanks made covert wars good and sexual harassment cute. Using heart-tugging footage of Afghan refugees, Hanks becomes a hero for getting Congress to give Afghan guerrillas, including future members of Al-Qaeda, millions of dollars in weapons and training against the Soviets. It came out while asking Congress to fund another Afghan war against those funded the first time. Foreign Policy in Focus writes about the NATO bombing of Kosovo. In the war on Yugoslavia 10 years later, FPIF senior analyst Stephen Zunes challenges the notion that this was a good war. For one thing, he argues, the bombing campaign, which began March 24, 1999, clearly made things worse for the Kosovar Albanians. Not only were scores of ethnic Albanians accidentally killed by NATO bombing raids, but the Serbs, unable to respond to NATO air attacks, turned their wrath against the most vulnerable segments of the population, the very Kosovar Albanians NATO claimed it would be defending. Wikipedia defines blowback as the resultant violent consequences, reported as news fact, when the actor intelligence agency hides its responsibility via media manipulation. Blowback denotes the attacked victim's revenge against the civil populace of the aggressor country, because the responsible politico-military leaders are invulnerable. A humanitarian cover story positions U.S. forces as defenders of the helpless, good guys wearing white hats rushing in to save the day, erasing the history of U.S. complicity. There are Muslim men who stand behind the Muslim women who are marching. The ratio of good men behind every good woman is the same in Afghanistan as it is here. How have those men been disempowered? What happened to shift control towards the religious extremes? Without examining the history, we're shooting in our sleep. We'll now read a poem by Rolf Jacobsen and a poem by Mary Oliver. The music is Explosions in the Sky with a song called Welcome, Ghost. When they sleep. All people are children when they sleep. There's no war in them then. They open their hands and breathe in that quiet rhythm heaven has given them. They pucker their lips like small children and open their hands halfway. Soldiers and statesmen, servants and masters, the stars stand guard and a haze veils the sky. A few hours when no one will do anybody harm. If only we could speak to one another then, when our hearts are half-open flowers, words like golden bees would drift in. God, teach me the language of sleep. Rolf Jacobsen. Hallelujah. Everyone should be born into this world happy and loving everything. But in truth, it rarely works that way. For myself, I have spent my life clamoring towards it. Hallelujah, anyway, I'm not where I started. And have you too been trudging like that, sometimes almost forgetting how wondrous the world is and how miraculously kind some people can be? And have you too decided that probably nothing important is ever easy? Not, say, for the first 60 years. Hallelujah, I'm 60 now and even a little more. And some days I feel I have wings. Mary Oliver. The music was Explosions in the Sky with Welcome, Ghost, from their latest All of a Sudden, I Miss Everyone. The poems were Rolf Jacobsen with When They Sleep and Mary Oliver's Hallelujah from her collection called Evidence. I'll now play Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, my favorite version, which is the velvet-voiced Rufus Wainwright from the soundtrack of Shrek.
Heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, her beauty and the moonlight overthrew. Tied you to a kitchen chair, she broke your throne, she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew the hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Maybe I have been here before. I know this room, I've walked this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you. I've seen your flag on the marble arch. Love is not a victory march, it's a cone and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. There was a time you let me know what's real and going on below, but now you never show it to me, do you? Remember when I moved in you, the holy dark was moving too, and every breath we drew was hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. God above, and all I ever learned from love was how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. And it's not a cry you can hear at night, it's not somebody who's seen the light, it's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
That was Rufus Wainwright with Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen from the movie Shrek. For a long time, that was my favorite song, and I think I've heard it hundreds of times. My daughter Olivia now plays a beautiful version on the piano, but I can't get her to sing it. It isn't a matter of being shy, because she belts out other songs like a born torch singer. Maybe she'll sing it on my 60th birthday, when I sprout wings. Yesterday, I attended a meeting of the Santa Cruz Human Rights Alliance. It's a wonderful group of activists who meet Mary Oliver's criteria for feeling that they have wings, 60 and a little more, and maybe a little more again. They would agree that nothing important is ever easy, at least, say, for the first 60 years. I'm honored to be in their company. A major objective of the group has been a petition for Santa Cruz County to sign on to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is a brilliantly written document. Every time I read it again, I emit a small hallelujah of my own that there are such courageous and clear-thinking people in high places. Contrarian that I am, however, I feel that Article 25 is written from a developed country perspective. It reads, "Everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care and necessary social services." The right that it ignores is the freedom to provide for your own family's needs through access to land and water. A human right has to be something given to you by God or nature, purely on the basis of having been born. It can only be taken away by people, not given. Whatever is a product of human labor can't be a human right, because it has to be first taken from the person who produced it, denying their right to have or give it. Providing the needy with food, clothes, shelter, or medicine is the prerogative of persons producing those goods. The first draft of the Constitution recognized the right to life, liberty, and property, which was replaced with the ephemeral and vapid pursuit of happiness. But happiness, in the vine and fig tree sense of security, requires property. If we lived in a fair world, I believe that it's human nature to be generous. But Article 25 focuses on generosity while ignoring the injustice at the heart of the global economy, the militarily backed monopolies of land and resources. Without resources, no one can produce. Without producing, the pursuit of happiness will always be at someone else's expense. An entitlement to the product without the means is the right to consume without production. it denies the one human right that everything else depends on. We'll break for Greg Brown's Here in the Going, Going, Gone. We'll return with my final critique about the National Radio Project show, Making Contact, and how this week's episode, Tax Me, I'm Yours, presented the right data points, but failed to connect the dots.
Dark laughter on the teeter-totter, an old song floats across the water. I know I should pack up and move on. One note Johnny's proliferate, the wind rises, the hour is late. Here in the going, going, gone. My heart ain't mine, my heart is yours, or else I left it out of doors like a baseball glove out on the lawn. I'd walk through fire to retrieve it, but still you never would believe it. Here in the going, going, everywhere you look, you see more of you and more of me, scrambling for the goods, the lines are drawn. Peace and quiet, is there any? We are the beautiful too many, here in the going, going. Modern love's a loaded gun. I live alone and love everyone, and I feel pretty good. Is that so wrong? Passion called and I would blow it. Now I'm an old Chinese poet. Here in the going, going, gone. Porch full of winter squash and pumpkin, summer's always really something, but one day fall arrives with a chilly dawn. And while lovers make love in warm beds, the forsaken sit and scratch their heads, here in the going, going. The rain keeps falling on the flood, the flower closes to a bud. All my gifts, you say, are just a con. But I'll always want to be your friend, that is my prayer, until I'm in, here in the going, going, gone.
That was Greg Brown with Here in the Going, Going, Gone from his CD, The Poet Game. Well, the tax deadline was here and going gone, leaving a froth of frustrated people and tax-related articles in its wake, among them myself and Making Contact, an excellent show from the National Radio Project. They began with a segment from the National Priorities Project, which tracks where our tax dollars go. On the site is an Iraq cost of war counter that zips through money so fast it makes my head spin. I can't watch it. It makes me too anxious. Their interactive tax chart shows 42 cents of every tax dollar going to some form of military spending. Less than 3 cents is split between energy, the environment, and science. 3 cents went to education and 3 to government, which might be seen as another branch of the military. 4 cents went to food and 4 to housing. A penny went to transportation and a penny to international affairs. In the next 2 segments of the show, Making Contact asked the question, who should be taxed? They present a group of wealthy New Yorkers petitioning to raise their taxes. They talk about the social services they've benefited from. The final portion interviews teachers in Nevada who serve populations that used to be needy and now are desperate. They talk emotionally about what the tax cuts will mean to them and the students they serve. With respect to Making Contact, they are, I believe, asking the wrong questions. Rather than simply asking where our tax dollars go, the deeper question is who gets to decide. In the original Articles of Confederation, the ones that were dismissed and replaced by the Constitution, the Founding Fathers wrote, "The United States and Congress assembled shall never engage in a war, nor enter into any treaties or alliances, nor coin money, nor regulate the value thereof, nor ascertain the sums and expenses necessary for the defense and welfare of the United States, nor emit bills, nor borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor appropriate money, nor agree upon the number of vessels of war to be built or purchased, or the number of land or sea forces to be raised, nor appoint a commander-in-chief of the army or navy, unless 9 states assent to the same. Nor shall a question on any other point, except for adjourning from day to day, be determined unless by the votes of the majority of the United States in Congress assembled." 9 out of 13 states is a 69% majority. How many of these decisions are now executive powers? The article reads, "Each state retains its sovereignty, freedom, and independence, and every power, jurisdiction, and right, which is not by this confederation expressly delegated to the United States Congress." That's Article 2. And 3 is, "The said states hereby severally enter into a firm league of friendship with each other, for their common defense, the security of their liberties, and their mutual and general welfare, binding themselves to assist each other against all forces offered to or attacks made upon them on account of religion, sovereignty, trade, or any other pretense whatever." What sovereign rights do the states now hold? We've gone from this to a law that says federal trumps local in any dispute. Rather than a league of mutual protection for attacks on our sovereignty, the government uses our money and military to destroy sovereignty, which is the greatest threat to centralized power. Making Contact continues with the question of who should be taxed and how much. But the real question is what should be taxed? Passive gains versus working wages. Income from usury versus active investment. Real estate speculation versus property ownership. My episode, A 2020 Vision, archived at radioforall.net, goes into this at depth and proposes how we could transition our taxes back to serving community interests. In the last segment with Nevada teachers, Making Contact suggests that higher taxes will equal higher services. But it's actually the opposite. Lower services, especially education, are the key to raising taxes. No one would vote for more military spending. Teachers, police, and firefighters make the best hostages when higher taxes are the ransom. But for every 6 cents that goes to them, as the National Priorities Project shows, 94 cents goes to government, military, and multinational corporations. No wonder those wealthy New Yorkers are up for paying more, when each dollar's a magnet to attract 94 when it boomerangs back. Our final song is sung by Susan Boyle, the Scottish spinster that I'm predicting won't be alone for long. Her performance on Britain's Got Talent has been the talk of the week. Amanda, the Barbie judge, tells her that when she walked out, everyone in the audience was against her. But I think she's engaging in a little projection. Perhaps someone among the 4,000 thinks the Cinderella story shouldn't be about beauty traded for wealth. This song, from a charity CD 10 years ago, shows that Susan Boyle didn't emerge from nowhere. It's Cry Me a River, which was also one of my favorite songs when I was trying to learn jazz piano. Jazz is the most difficult thing I've ever tried to wrap my brain around. But it's made taxes and global economics feel easy by comparison. Until next week, this has been Teresa Caraggio with Third Paradigm. Thanks to Skidmark Bob for music, production, and editing.
Now you say you're lonely. You've cried long night through. Come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. Now you say you're sorry for being so untrue. Come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. Nearly drove me out of my head. Though you never shed a tear. Remember, remember all that you said. So your love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me, and now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me. I cried a river over you. Told me you were through with me, and now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river.